For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Using the election districts that were set up for the November election as a starting point, the reapportionment board will review several possible changes this weekend. Ways to improve the plan have been suggested by the public. The board will decide on a draft final plan or plans for public review. In March, the board meets in Anchorage to make a final decision and forward it to the governor. Tuckerman Babcock has been working with the reapportionment board. He says there have only been a couple of changes suggested for the Fairbanks area.
The most comment has been on the Parks Ridge precinct. Representative Jeanette James has written in on behalf of the people for Parks Ridge to move them into District 29. Many people in that precinct have also written in and asked to be moved into 29 from District 34. And other than that, there's been just one person would like some lines straightened out in the, along the Steese Highway. Yeah, and otherwise, there haven't been many comments from the Fairbanks area.
This weekend, the public has an opportunity to comment. While the board meets at the Captain Bartlett Inn, the public can review the 18 or so various proposals that the board will look at and comment anytime between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on Saturday. Babcock says the board might like portions of different maps and could combine the best regional approaches in a draft. Outside of Fairbanks, Babcock says the board has heard lots of comments about some election districts. They've heard from the Valdez area and the Mat-Su borough, and Babcock says they've heard about Senate District R, a large horseshoe-shaped region covering most of the interior. Some people want to change that district so it's not quite as extensive.
Well, it's certainly possible to change that quite a bit. There are other ways of dividing rural Alaska and other Senate combinations that could take place. There haven't been much in the way of discussions except that Prince William Sound representatives have asked to be paired with the Mat-Su or Kenai Peninsula district instead of the rural district. And then there have been some suggestions that the rural district be paired with one of the Fairbanks House seats instead of the Delta to Valdez House seat.
The 5-member reapportionment board is also interested in hearing from people who like the election districts that were created for last year's election. Babcock says comments on it haven't been harsh. Babcock doesn't expect a draft plan to be ready for board approval until Sunday. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Family medical leave will guarantee workers up to 3 months unpaid leave each year to care for a new child or a sick relative. One of the compromises that made the bill more likable to Congress is the exemption for small business. Companies with fewer than 50 employees won't have to comply. When it passed in the House of Representatives, Alaska's Congressman Don Young supported it. Young spokesman Steve Hansen says it's a pro-family, pro-jobs bill that mainly affects big business.
This bill specifically affects about 50% of the workers in the country, but because it is designed to protect small businesses, it applies to less than probably around 10% of the total businesses.
If a worker takes unpaid family leave, the employer must continue providing health care benefits and must give the employee the same job or a similar one when the employee returns to work. Only workers who work at least 25 hours a week and have been employed for a year would be covered. Many employers already have some leave policy. Hansen says putting family leave into law ensures that benefit for others.
The state of Alaska approved legislation earlier which protects state employees, and we felt that it was only right that the same protections for workers should be also included for a majority of them in the private sector. So essentially, you know, the major cutting line on which businesses are affected and which ones aren't goes down to the number of 50 or more workers.
The family leave provisions also apply to local, state, and federal employees. Some Fairbanks employers don't see much impact since they already have leave policies. The school district and the university say current policies already cover the basic requirements of this bill. Fairbanks Memorial Hospital also offers leave for employees now. Human Resources Director Sandy Hasselberger says they already offer 6 months of leave for the medical reasons this legislation covers.
In cases of maternity, birth of a child, or an adoption, that's usually where our employees are using it now. Occasionally, there will be a family member that has a serious health problem where the employee needs to use some time, but that doesn't happen too often.
Hasselberger doesn't expect the law will result in changes in the hospital policy. Since small business is exempt, family leave isn't expected to mean major changes. Family leave provisions should be in place 6 months after the president signs a family leave bill. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. The council was set to consider a new tobacco tax and an increase in the liquor tax. But before the public hearing even began on those proposals, City Council Member Mike Andrews changed them to wholesale instead of retail taxes. That change means that they'll have to wait until the January 11th meeting for approval. Andrews is optimistic the taxes will pass then and give the city the $1 million it needs to keep the fire department running all year.
I think the only hope we have for continuing to have a city fire department under the current structure is to have increased revenue, and that would mean the wholesale taxes on alcohol and tobacco products. I think the public is ready to approve a small amount of taxes to see how responsible city government is with that money.
The city manager estimates that a wholesale tax on the distributors would not only be easier for the city to collect, but it might bring in more money than the retail tax. But approval of the taxes isn't necessarily guaranteed. Some citizens ask that the council come up with other revenue ideas, saying cigarettes and alcohol are taxed enough. Even if the council approves the 8% taxes, the Interior Taxpayers Association is already promising a ballot referendum to take the question to the public. Councilmember Lowell Purcell says even if there is a special election, he thinks voters will support the taxes.
I do not believe that the residents of this community will allow us not to fund the fire department for the last 6 months. I don't believe the tobacco tax and the alcohol tax will in fact go down to defeat at the ballot. And the reason I say that is, again, the alcohol tax was a 5 to 10% in 1989 when they put on the ballot, only failed by 54 votes. I think an 8% will pass. At the wholesale level, I think that's a lot more palatable to the voters. Same way with the tobacco tax, and as you know, Ann, I'm a smoker. I smoke, drink, and chase women, but smoking is the only thing I do successfully. So I just feel that we'll be able to do that, and those should fund the fire department for the last 6 months, and if they don't, the residents are going to allow us to do something to fund them, because nobody wants to be without fire protection.
If those tax proposals would not stand voter scrutiny, Purcell says they'll look at other ideas, like a city lottery, to find the $1 million for the fire department. City Council Member Jerry Cleworth says the council did a good job approving the budget since they don't have the money to do more, and they can't count on tax revenues that don't exist yet. He says if the public supports the new taxes, then he'll support keeping the fire department going all year.
The problem we're having here is the tax cap is in our charter, too. And some of us have a real problem that we're trying to figure out a way to weasel around that. If these go, the wholesale taxes is where the council's aiming at now, if they go on the ballot and the people vote for them, that's fine. They fully well know that this is what we're going to use the money for in this coming year. But a lot of the complaints we had here tonight is they're worried that once again we're just going to give this away in salaries and wages, and we're going to be back a year from now having to look for another $800,000, $900,000 to solve the problem again. They don't feel we're solving the problem here.
Council members will consider those wholesale taxes at their January 11th meeting. The budget approved last night stands at $16 million for city government operations and more than $50 million to run the municipal utility system. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In 3, 2, 1. Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Jim Sampson says if this is a Christmas gift, he doesn't want any more. The borough would lose about $1 million in state shared revenue if the governor gets his way. Sampson says the cuts in municipal assistance really came as a surprise.
It's a little unexpected, I guess, to say the least, especially in light of the fact that we just had some municipal meetings in Juneau and was told by the administration that we wouldn't be seeing these types of reductions. So I don't believe that one should reduce programs by shifting those to local municipalities. They're not reductions or transfers.
Sampson says other mayors he's talked to aren't happy about the proposal either. In a memo to the Fairbanks city manager, City Finance Director Barbara Konecny says some reduction in municipal assistance was anticipated, but nothing this extreme. The proposed reduction would have a $500,000 impact on the 1993 budget approved by the Fairbanks City Council Monday night. That 3% reduction could mean the loss of 7 to 9 city jobs. Borough Mayor Jim Sampson says if the cuts go through, it will probably mean a reduction in services. Sampson says the other option is to cover the loss through local taxes.
We have the same problem at local level, state level. You either reduce your services to the public, reduce your operations, or pass those costs on. And when municipalities are mostly funded by property tax, you know, that's where it's going to go. And I think the administration is telling local governments, look, you know, it's your responsibility to institute some other type of revenue, such as sales taxes. And I don't have any plans to be putting that forward here in the near future.
Sampson says he's sure local officials around the state will talk with legislators to send a message to the governor that shifting the responsibility to local property taxpayers is not acceptable right now. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. In October, borough voters approved the new hotel-motel tax. Businesses inside the city of Fairbanks will continue paying their 8% bed tax to the city. This new borough tax is for businesses outside the city but within the borough boundaries. It affects bed and breakfasts and targets the new Princess Tours Hotel, scheduled to open this summer. Right now, the borough is asking businesses to register for the new tax. Diane Borgeson in the finance department says forms have been sent to about 80 businesses. Half of them have been returned so far. Borgeson says the main thing the borough is trying to get across now is that any business that rents rooms must register.
Many of the businesses have been surprised that we are including the smaller businesses as well. There is no limit on the size of the business, so anyone that receives compensation for lodging basically is included, whether it be one room or 1,000 rooms.
Borgeson says they're trying to register businesses by January 1st. That's when the tax begins. She expects the hard part to be finding those businesses that are pretty far outside the city limits. Business owners are responsible for collecting the 8% tax and paying it to the borough. And Borgeson says businesses will be on the honor system in the beginning because the enforcement policy isn't set.
There are provisions in the code that, you know, establish this as a misdemeanor if a business refuses to register and refuses to collect the tax. And there are fines provided for in the code, but it would require that we go out there and actually find the people and enforce that. So far, we have not provided for that, either in staffing or through our legal department.
Initial revenue estimates are that the new tax will bring in about $170,000 a year. The borough assembly intends for the funds to help cover the cost of running the Carlson Activity Center, which continues to be subsidized by borough property taxpayers. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Alaska's tourism industry has spent time and money presenting an image of the state that will bring in visitors. But that image was tarnished when the Board of Game approved plans to kill wolves from the air. But when it was reported that officials felt tourists would benefit by reducing the number of wolves, Bob Jacobson of the Alaska Visitors Association says he knew they had a big problem on their hands.
Had the decision been handled differently and explained in a scientific manner, we may not be here tonight. What was being conjured up, however, was the image of helicopter gunships tracking radio-collared wolves and leaving them dead in the snow for the sake of mom and pop from Syracuse.
While the Wolf Summit has focused on science and wildlife biology, Jacobson explained that everyone knows now managing wildlife affects the visitor industry in a big way. Bob Dindinger with the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council estimates an actual tourism boycott could cost the industry here more than $100 million. If the state were to move forward with wolf control, Dindinger assumes the boycott would return. Countering that, Dindinger says, would cost a minimum of $2 million.
That money would be spent in part on educating people on the rational basis for this, but most of that money would be spent to attract other visitors who are perhaps not as sensitive to the call for a boycott.
Some Fairbanks citizens attending the Wolf Summit suggested that the state should be marketing a true picture of Alaska and refuting what they see as false claims in the national media. Ralph Seekins was part of the panel on tourism interests, but he's also a sports hunter. Seekins agrees with funding for the industry to mitigate damage that's been done.
Many of us are here to try to address that misperception and tell them that we're not a bunch of guys with wolf blood up to our elbows, that we are instead people who want wise use of the resource and a return to abundance.
Seekins supports an abundance of wildlife, saying it's in everyone's best interest. Also from the audience, Bud Burris with the Alaska Outdoor Council suggested that when they're figuring the financial impact of tourism in Alaska, they aren't considering what hunting does for the state and how the guiding and outfitting industry has suffered the last few years. Tourism representatives admit they haven't looked at that. But one thing they will be paying attention to now is game management. One tourism industry representative says they've been told by consultants that they've been negligent in the past for not getting involved with the Board of Game. With the economic power a boycott can have, they don't plan to make that mistake again. The tourism representatives also suggest that the Board of Game come up with a way for wildlife viewers to help pay for their share of management. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. While some city revenues remain tight, one source of funds that continues to grow is from the bed tax. With more than $1.7 million at stake in 1993, demand for bed tax funds comes from different groups. The money is designated for tourism promotion, with the idea that more promotion will bring more tourists to pay the 8% tax. The city set a precedent more than a year ago when the council decided to spend some bed tax money on a foot patrolman for downtown Fairbanks. This year, the city manager wanted to pay for three foot patrolmen with bed tax money. On his side are some parents, educators, and police, but they'd rather see the officer in the schools than on the streets. Captain Mike Nielsen of the Fairbanks Police Department told the council on Monday that crime rates are going up, and a lot of victims are school-age kids.
We've had two new groups identifying themselves as gangs this year. One's extorting money, others beating kids up. We've had racial incidents, all white kids coming from high school going to attack all black kids at a junior high or middle high school. We've had some serious types of crimes, and it's continuing to escalate. We need to be in the classroom. We need to be in the schools as part of the staff, working with the staff and working with the students as an officer.
Nielsen supports putting two officers, mainly in the middle schools, and having them spend some time in elementary and high schools. A state juvenile probation supervisor, Jim Thomas, says the program will create a positive relationship with police and open up the lines of communications between police and students.
There's no information in police reports that talk about the development of gangs or who the leaders of those gangs are or some of the ad hoc activities they're doing. That information would be available in a school system if the law enforcement officers were able to work there.
An officer in the school's program is already in place in North Pole, and parents who testified before the council say it's getting a good response. Elrita McGoffin has two teenage sons. She says it's appropriate to use money dedicated for tourism to fund the program, since it's a preventive measure that will make Fairbanks a more pleasant place to visit.
A couple years ago, I think I would have been appalled at this idea. I would have thought of it as an armed guard type thing, but I've seen how it's worked in other places, and I think it's an idea whose time has come. Problems in our schools, the violence and discipline problems, are not a school district problem. They're a community problem, and our community needs to face them straight on before they really turn serious.
Not all parents who testified agreed that they want a police officer in the schools, but the program does have support from the teachers' union and parent-teachers' associations. Even some in the tourism industry say the program might be a good idea, but there is concern about using bed tax money to pay for it. Carol Lay is a former teacher who now works for the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Lay told the council that less money for the Bureau will affect the tourism dollars coming into city coffers.
When you start pulling money out of the Convention and Visitors Bureau and putting that money in other areas, what you're doing is cutting off your nose to spite your face. You take dollars out of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and dollar for dollar, you're stopping people from coming to this town.
Lay also pointed out that if the council passes a tobacco tax and increases the liquor tax, the tourists paying those taxes might help pay for more police officers. Council members indicated mixed feelings over the issue. Several people who testified in favor of the officer in the schools, were asked by council members if they would also support the tax increases on alcohol and tobacco. The council finally agreed to use the bed tax money to pay for two policemen instead of three, with the idea that one of them will work downtown in the summer and in the schools during the winter months. The Convention and Visitors Bureau will get about $15,000 less next year than it did this year. Its 1993 budget is still more than $1 million. But the demand for some share of the hotel-motel tax money may continue to grow. Currently, 15% of that money goes to community-based organizations, and the council will consider how to allocate that $300,000 in January. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. Under the settlement approved by the legislature 2 years ago, the state plans to reconstitute the Mental Health Trust using other available state lands to replace trust land already sold. So the state asks that the thousands of people who bought original trust land get clear title to that property. Judge Mary Green put a freeze on those lands in July of 1990 when earlier negotiations to settle the case broke down. But in an order issued last week, Judge Green denied the state's request to essentially release the third parties, or the so-called moms and pops, interests. Attorney Tom Custer is representing the state in the mental health lands case. Custer says Green wants to keep things the way they are, since she doesn't know how she'll ultimately rule on the settlement itself.
It's certainly a disappointment to the state, because this is an important issue for us to gain relief for the moms and pops as early as possible. We just got the decision and haven't made a determination as to what our response will be, but it's certainly a disappointment.
For the state, part of the appeal of the settlement was that all sides agreed that the third party should no longer have their lands tied up because of the case, but Judge Green believes releasing those people prematurely might further complicate the case if the settlement isn't approved. And she says the likelihood of final approval of the settlement is speculative. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. The Wolf Summit was an attempt to bring people from more than 100 interest groups together to talk about wolf control. A planned aerial wolf kill was canceled after it drew public criticism and threats of a tourism boycott. Animal rights groups and conservationists did not condone the plan, but Alaska Governor Walter Hickel, who called the summit, says they did give the Board of Game more to consider when looking at wolf control.
And I would encourage each board member to take that information and then examine the whole wolf management decision. And I think that out of that will come better decisions.
The Board of Game meets later this month and could decide to go ahead with the aerial wolf kill, but animal rights groups say if that happens, they'll renew calls for a boycott. For the Christian Science Monitor, I'm Ann Thornton in Fairbanks, Alaska. 3, 2, 1. The people invited to the Wolf Summit spent most of the last 2 days in small groups, coming up with things for the Board of Game to consider when looking at wolf control. While the more than 100 participants say there are times when wolf control can be considered, when and how it might be carried out are still areas of disagreement. But the working groups came up with ideas and suggestions. Governor Hickel says the Board of Game should take it all into consideration when it addresses wolf control again.
And I would encourage each board member to, I'm sure they will, to listen to some of the ideas that they heard, to take that information and take it back to their meetings and examine the whole wolf management decision in the light of what we've seen. And I think that out of that will come better decisions, better for wildlife and better for people.
In addition to the small group recommendations, several animal rights and wildlife groups suggested that the Board of Game and the Department of Fish and Game change their names to reflect wildlife interests and change their focus and approach to wildlife management. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Most of the work at the Wolf Summit was done in small groups made up of people with different points of view on wolf control. The 9 working groups made their recommendations Monday at the end of the summit. The groups did not look specifically at wolf control, but rather the decision-making process at the Board of Game and how it could be improved. All the groups did things a little differently, but there were some common themes. Among them was a call for more diversity on the Board of Game. Lowell Thomas represented one group that included that in its report.
There should be a different process for the selection of game board members to ensure a balance of interests, and that a criteria, or perhaps better criteria, should be devised in this regard for the selection of a balanced board of game.
Others made that call during the summit, too, but the chairman of the Board of Game, Dick Burley of Fairbanks, defended the board's makeup.
I like to think that we've got a good mix on the board, and the people that are on the board are trying to follow the mandate that we work under to provide for the use of the resource by all of the people of the state of Alaska, not for any special interest group. And I'm not real sure that it's a good process when you start appointing people with a special interest to a board that's supposed to look at the overall use of the resource.
Summit participants generally supported the work of the Wolf Management Planning Team, which spent 2 years looking at wolf control before presenting a management plan to the Board of Game. But the groups didn't agree on wolf control. Some said there may come a time when it can be considered, but when that time comes and how it would be carried out would have to be carefully considered by the board. Dave Vandenberg of the Northern Alaska Environmental Center said after the summit that the various interests represented gave the board plenty to think about.
I wouldn't want to be the Board of Game right now because they're supposed to be getting some direction from all this. And what they're getting is a bunch of vagueness, a bunch of kind of general guidelines. But I think what is significant for us is that the Wolf Management Planning Team has been identified as a legitimate basis from which to make all decisions about wolf management. And I think that for the life of this issue, I think it's also significant that none of the groups were able to either say we are patently opposed to wolf control and aerial gunning, and none of them were able to say we are completely in favor of it.
Another common theme at the summit was the need for education, keeping the public informed about what's going on with wildlife management and educating them about the nature of wolf management. Dick Bishop of the Alaska Outdoor Council feels that the summit itself did its share of educating.
Now they've heard that, you know, not 80% of the wolves in Alaska will be killed, and there's no endangerment of the species or the wolf population in Alaska or the wolves in the areas that were proposed, and that people really do depend on wildlife for food and, you know, all these things that, and everybody isn't a horn-hunting sport hunter.
One other point of agreement at the summit was clear as well. 3 days is not enough time to talk about what to do about Alaska wolves and how they impact the moose and caribou populations. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Adding sexual orientation to the university's non-discrimination policy looks like a few simple words on paper, but recent debate in Anchorage over a gay rights ordinance gave the state an idea of how emotional the issue can be. Outgoing Regent Morris Thompson of Fairbanks says rather than debate the issue over and over, he thinks the legislature should approach it since it's an issue of statewide significance.
This issue is impacting municipalities, cities, individuals, other private institutions, and therefore it really is
belongs in the realm of public policy.
As a member of the board's Human Resources Committee that met on Monday morning, Thompson suggested delaying action on the policy until the legislature considers it. The committee agreed with that recommendation, but another regent says the legislature also has a difficult time dealing with controversial issues. Bob Williams doesn't see leaving the issue up to legislators as the answer.
For many people, this transforms into a morality issue, and I don't see it as that. I see this as a plain equal treatment of people issue. And the fact that confusion continues to occur whenever this topic is discussed in public forums, I have no reason to believe that is not going to happen in the state legislature, and will happen probably in such a way that it will stifle any action taking place at all. So by referring to the state legislature, my feeling is we're saying that
we're not going to take any action on it, because I don't believe they will either.
Another regent, Mark Helmrich, says the board is ducking its responsibility if it doesn't address the issue. He sees the committee recommendation as a compromise. But Helmrich says regents need to vote it up or down.
My position will be that this is very definitely in the purview of the Board of Regents, and we should deal with it. The entire university, from the testimony that I've heard anyway, is in favor of the policy. The General Assembly, the students, and the faculty all have given it its favorable recommendation. It seems to me that the only board, or the only university organ that still is undecided, is the Board of Regents. And I think clearly the policy should be put in effect.
Despite the committee recommendation to put off a vote, a change in the makeup of the Board of Regents may determine how this issue turns out. Williams and Thompson's terms on the Board of Regents expire at the end of this month. They are on opposite sides of this issue, so Williams expects the two new regents, Dan Ogg and Mary Jane Fate, to be the deciding votes. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. Criticism came from all over the world when the Alaska Board of Game approved the wolf-killing plan. The board wants to restore moose and caribou herds, but environmental and animal rights groups objected to shooting about 5% of the state's wolf population from airplanes. That pressure and threats of a tourism boycott prompted the state to back off. Now Department of Fish and Game spokeswoman Kathy Harm says everyone involved can come to Fairbanks and talk about it.
The summit is a chance to invite people from outside the state to come to Alaska and meet with Alaskans and to establish some lines of communication that haven't been there in the past.
The three-day Wolf Summit will review all perspectives of wolf management. For the Christian Science Monitor, I'm Ann Thornton in Fairbanks, Alaska.
The summit is a chance to invite people from outside the state, big organizations, both hunting organizations and environmental organizations and animal rights organizations, to come to Alaska and meet with Alaskans and to establish some lines of communication that haven't been there in the past.
Three, two, one. The Teamsters contract approved by the council last fall was retroactive to 1989, so the cost by the end of this year will add up to $1.6 million. City Utilities Director Virgil Gillespie estimates that some increases in telephone charges, along with hikes in water, sewer, electric, and district heat rates, will cover it.
We are going across the board. It is a percent rate increase. We took all of our rate categories. We took our gross revenue from that utility, and knowing what we had to generate, what did that equate to in total revenue? And so we just raised all rates within that utility the same percentage.
The percentages for each utility differ, but the increases in water, sewer, and electric rates will add a little more than a dollar to those average monthly bills for residential customers. The telephone increase means a $1 hike in the line charge on everyone's bill. Other increases vary depending on what service you use. The City Council won't decide on the rate hikes until February 8th, but four council members approved the Teamsters contract, and it takes four votes to approve the utility rate increases. Gillespie expects to see the increases approved.
They signed a contract, ratified a contract, I should say, and that has certain obligations, and now it's necessary to fulfill the contract you've ratified.
If the rate increases get the council's approval, they'll take effect March 1st. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Newsminer publisher Paul Massey says there is demand for a Saturday publication, particularly since the Newsminer became a morning paper last summer.
One major consideration for us was when we converted the paper from afternoon to morning, we lengthened the period when people didn't get a Newsminer. Formerly it was Friday afternoon to Sunday morning, and when we went AM, you know, we lengthened that another 12 hours, and we just thought that window was too long for people to be without a newspaper, and you know, it really wasn't necessary to do market research. The people themselves came to us and asked that we reinstitute the paper, and we think it's the right thing to do.
Massey says no large-scale staff expansion is planned. They are looking at a rate increase. The Newsminer quit publishing a Saturday paper nearly 4 years ago. Massey says this time they hope to make it more attractive to advertisers by offering package deals with the Friday or Sunday papers. Even though there is no weekly Fairbanks paper right now, Massey says there still is lots of competition.
I think there are 11 radio stations and two broadcast television stations and two cable stations. So and you know, any number of people are looking for the advertising dollars, high school yearbooks. You know, I could go on and on. So, you know, people say to us, you know, we've got a monopoly here. We don't look at it that way. We've got a lot of competition. And we have to fight for every dollar we get.
At least one competitor says he's thrilled to hear the news. Hank Hove is general manager of KTVF Television and two radio stations. Hove says he's missed the Saturday paper, and he's not worried about the competition.
There's enough advertising dollars in this town to support any good product. Really, seriously. If you're making a good, putting out a good product in this town, it will be supported.
In addition to the Saturday edition, the Newsminer will also print papers on two holidays, the 4th of July and Thanksgiving. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. With buses that are 12 years and older, Borough Transportation Director Max Lyon says the transit system is worn out. So the borough wants to get $2 million in federal highway funds to buy 8 new buses for the 2 city bus routes and 4 new vans for the disabled service. The money is available through the federal transportation program, and state funds would serve as a local match for the funding. But the Department of Transportation has told the borough that it will cost the Fairbanks area some other project that's already been budgeted. Max Lyon disputes that, saying money must be made available for air quality programs, and the new buses qualify for those funds.
They say it does come out of our pot. I guess it's arguable or unclear if it would or would not. We believe it wouldn't.
The borough is hoping to get approval from the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee for the bus money to come through. Even if the money does come at the expense of road projects, the chairman of the borough's Transit Commission says it's appropriate. Carl Benson says this $2 million amounts to 1% of the DOT budget. And Benson says the amount of money spent on roads here is lopsided. If the money spent on the Geist Road extension, for example, had been invested instead, Benson says the interest alone would more than pay for an expanded mass transit system.
And after all, we're building roads here at a fury. Look at this Farmers Loop project. It's a fine road, but it's much bigger than it needed to be. The same with the Geist Road. And what we're doing right now, Fairbanks represents one of the most wonderful reservoirs of historic value in interior Alaska. This is one of the things that attracts tourists to this area. Now, if we go and pave the whole thing over with a bunch of real freeways and loops and supermarkets through the whole system, you can turn Fairbanks into a cold Fresno. And what kind of a tourist attraction is that?
Benson would like to see the bus service expanded. He supports rebuilding toward the 9 bus routes that used to run, saying those feeder lines are needed to get people to the 2 lines operating in downtown Fairbanks now. Benson says if the buses covered more area, more people could ride, and there would be fewer cars on the road. That's especially an issue in weather like this, when many drivers find their cars won't even start. UAF worker Paula Long was the only one in her office on Tuesday because of the weather, which stranded co-workers at home. Long says that's because she rides the bus.
I have been riding the bus for the past 2 years. My car was in a wreck, and I decided that I don't need to drive after all. So it's very convenient for me to take the bus. It stops right in front of my house. I just hop in the bus, and it takes me right to work.
Convenience may be one of the biggest reasons people ride the bus, but the fact that it's not convenient for everyone is one criticism of the system. Borough Assemblymember Harold Gillum is one of a few assembly members who doesn't believe the borough should be subsidizing bus riders. The borough claims it pays about $2.50 for every $1.50 it costs to ride the bus. Gillum believes the subsidy is double that amount. He says it's an expensive system that doesn't really reduce air pollution by trading one bus on the road instead of hundreds of cars.
At certain hours a day, like going out to the university, where it will have a pretty good ridership, but all the rest of the time of the day, that bus will be wandering around through town with one or two passengers on it. People say, well, gee, you know, we have less cars on the road. Well, a large bus creates more problems on the road than a car does.
Gillum says the borough doesn't have the population base to warrant a large public transit system, and there are other things the borough should spend its money on. And he says expanding the system will only mean losing more money. But he also concedes that he's the minority on the borough assembly, and eliminating the bus service won't happen anytime soon. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton.